As the United Nations Secretary General met with the Ukrainian president on Thursday, Russia fired missiles at the capital of Kyiv, resulting in at least one fatality.
There were five rockets shelled on the territory of Kyiv. Two of them were destroyed by air defense, as far as we know, and three actually reached the target. So two missiles reached a civilian building.
Plus, Ukraine's sinking of the Moskva is putting new scrutiny on Turkey's policy of banning most Russian warships from entering the Black Sea.
Turkey has a stronger hand now towards Russia.
And later in the program, how social media posts are affecting young people's perceptions of the war. Today is Friday, April 29th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Miller. Missiles struck the Ukrainian capital of Kyiv on Thursday during a visit by UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres. Reporter Anna Chernikova shared with me some of the details.
There were five rockets shelled on the territory of Kyiv. Two of them were destroyed by air defense, as far as we know, and three actually reached the target. So two missiles reached a civilian building and almost in the city center, actually. We're very close to the city center, and one reached one of the enterprises. What we call it here, it's kind of, you know, a postcard from Moscow because this happened just around 7 o'clock in the evening, so Kyiv time, so just when the meeting of President Zelensky and UN Secretary General Mr. Guterres ended. Unfortunately, what we know so far is that there is one person killed and five people have been rescued and two people injured as a result of this shelling.
And I also want to ask you about this. I've seen some reports that Ukraine is trying to muster an evacuation corridor for civilians out of Mariupol. That, of course, has been something that has been quite a challenge for Ukraine because evacuation corridors have not been allowed to be opened by Russia. What do we know about the efforts today?
Yeah, this is one of the most difficult questions and one of the most difficult point in the negotiations that Ukraine has so far with Russian side. What we know is that after the visit by UN Secretary General, UN has already created a team for Mariupol evacuation. This team would need a couple of days to prepare the evacuation. But now we talk only about civilians, and we talk particularly about the Azovstal plant. So there is no information yet whether this evacuation team would work in general. On the evacuation from Mariupol for the civilians. What we know so far is that this is for people who are now blocked at Azovstal plant. So there are negotiations now between Ukraine and Russia. President Zelensky pointed out yesterday that Ukraine is ready to start the evacuation ASAP. And Ukraine can guarantee no shellings, no military actions whatsoever. So now it should be confirmed by Russian side. But again, at least a couple of days would be needed. And of course, the confirmation from Russian side would be needed.
Anna Chernikova reporting from Kyiv. Thank you.
Thank you.
As we heard from Anna, there was also another fatality during those missile strikes on Thursday. Our colleagues at Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, say that Ukrainian rescue workers recovered the body of a Radio Liberty producer on Friday from under the rubble of a building in Kyiv that was hit by a missile. In a statement, RFERL said that Vera Girich, who had been working in their Kyiv bureau since February of 2018, had been killed after a Russian rocket hit the building that she had lived in. Russia has not so far commented on the incident. Also, relatives are telling news outlets that a former U.S. Marine, 22-year-old Willie Joseph Cancel, has been killed fighting alongside Ukrainian forces in the war with Russia in what's the first known death of a U.S. citizen fighting in Ukraine. Ukraine also acknowledged on Friday it was taking heavy losses in Russia's assault in the east, but said Russia's losses were even worse. Ukraine has acknowledged losing control of some towns and villages there since the assault began last week, but says Moscow's gains have come at a massive cost to Russian forces already worn down from its earlier defeat near the Capitol. U.S. President Joe Biden called for the U.S. Congress to pass $33 billion in additional security and humanitarian assistance to Ukraine on Thursday. Biden's request comes as U.S. lawmakers pass legislation expediting the transfer of military equipment to combat the unprovoked Russian invasion. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson continues our coverage.
The Biden administration has strong bipartisan support on Capitol Hill for sending more aid. On Thursday, the U.S. House of Representatives passed legislation expediting the process for sending U.S. weapons to Ukraine. Republican Representative Guy Reschenthaler.
I strongly support this bill, which streamlines existing defense authorities to enable the president to enter into a lend-lease agreement directly with Ukraine and Eastern European countries. I know I speak for my Republican colleagues in expressing my wholehearted support for the people of Ukraine as they defend themselves and their democracy against Vladimir Putin's atrocities.
As millions flee Ukraine and reports of Russian atrocities mount, U.S. lawmakers are aware of the urgency for action. Democratic Representative Jamie Raskin.
This is a moment of grave emergency in Ukraine as Putin's army continues to bomb hospitals and schools, rape and assault women, and murder the civilian population.
Biden's request is not expected to face any significant opposition when Congress takes it up for consideration. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
The Kremlin on Friday said that a proposal by President Biden to allow U.S. officials to seize Russian assets and use the funds to support Ukraine would amount to illegal expropriation. Speaking on Thursday, NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said that if Finland and Sweden decided to join the organization, membership should be able to be granted quickly.
Then I'm also certain that we will be able to find arrangements for that interim period between Finland and Sweden applies and until the formal ratification is finalized in all 30 parliaments.
Stoltenberg also said that NATO is ready to keep up its support for Ukraine in the war against Russia for years, including helping Kyiv to advance from old Soviet-era weapons to modern Western military equipment.
So we will continue to put the maximum pressure on President Putin to end the war by imposing sanctions, by providing economic support, but also military support to Ukraine. And we need to be prepared for the long term.
His remarks came after the Kremlin warned that Western arms supplies to Ukraine, including heavy weapons, pose a threat to the security of the European continent. In Bogor, West Java, Indonesian President Joko Widodo said on Friday that he had invited Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky to attend this year's G20 summit to be held in November. He said the G20 can be a catalyst for global economic recovery as the world grapples with COVID-19 and the war in Ukraine. Widodo also said Indonesia's constitution forbids providing military assistance to Ukraine, but Indonesia stands ready to provide humanitarian assistance. Ukraine's sinking of the Moskva, the flagship of Russia's Black Sea Fleet, is putting new scrutiny on Ankara's policy of banning most Russian warships from entering the Black Sea. Analysts suggest the Ukraine conflict is changing the balance of power in the Turkish-Russian relations. Dorian Jones has that story.
The Moskva was not the only Russian warship lost to Ukrainian forces. Any replacements of vessels destroyed must pass through Turkish-controlled waters. But Turkey is severely curtailing Russian warship access to the Black Sea under the International Montreux Convention. Yorick Ushuk at the Middle East Institute in Washington says Turkey is key to Russia's ability to sustain its forces in the Black Sea.
Turkey closed the Turkish Straits, both Dardanelles and Bosphorus, for the Russian naval transit. Only the ships belonging to Black Sea Fleet, they can claim they are going back to their home bases and they can transit. By not be able to bring new vessels, they have to use their aging assets in the Black Sea fully engaged with the Ukraine campaign.
Russia's assault on Ukraine is also hindered by Turkish-made drones extracting a heavy toll on its forces. But Moscow is refraining from criticizing Ankara, Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov this month described Turkish relations as excellent. This week, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan spoke by telephone with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, as part of his mediating efforts. Analysts suggest Turkey's refusal to enforce Western sanctions against Russia is one reason why Moscow is wary of upsetting Ankara. Russia's assault on Ukraine is also hindered by Turkish-made drones extracting a heavy toll on its forces. But Moscow is refraining from criticizing Ankara. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov this month described Turkish relations as excellent. This week, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan spoke by telephone with his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, as part of his mediating efforts. Analysts suggest Turkey's refusal to enforce Western sanctions against Russia is one reason why Moscow is wary of upsetting Ankara. Samuel Bendet is with the Russian Studies Program at the CNA, a non-profit research and analyst organization in the U.S. state of Virginia.
Russia maybe doesn't want to isolate Turkey as a potential mediator and as one of the few remaining countries which are willing to deal with Russia sort of on an equal basis in the midst of all the sanctions and anti-Russian sentiment.
Russia, in the past, has used its military presence in Syria as leverage over Turkey by threatening to set off a new exodus of refugees into Turkey. Analysts say Putin had an advantage in his relationship with Erdogan, but the war in Ukraine is forcing a rebalancing. Asla Aydintashbash is with the European Council on Foreign Relations.
Turkey has a stronger hand now towards Russia. Russia's ties of signaling displeasure to Turkey when they didn't like Turkish actions or Turkish sales to Ukraine by way of bombing certain targets in Syria or doing something in Libya. And it's harder for them to do so now. They do want to preserve Turkey as a semi-neutral status. They want to have an economic lifeline. They want to have a logistical hub.
The sight of Russian warships frequently passing Istanbul is for now a thing of the past, as Turkey enforces a ban on Russia's access to the Black Sea, not only complicating Russia's Ukrainian invasion, but making clear that its relationship with Moscow is becoming one of equals. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Miller. Tensions are rising in the eastern Moldovan region of Transnistria, a de facto separatist region, as authorities there blame Ukraine for a recent series of attacks on government facilities. Kyiv denies this, and observers say the danger is rising that Russia could use the attacks as an excuse to open a new front against Ukraine or against Moldova itself. Elizabeth Chernoff narrates this report.
On the other side of this bridge is Transnistria, an unrecognized separatist state that has been de facto independent since a conflict in 1992. Since then, this territory has had a Russian army presence, and the politics of the region have been pro-Kremlin. Now, several violent acts in Transnistria are raising fears that against the backdrop of the war in Ukraine, Russia will have an excuse to intervene in this territory, or in Moldova itself. Georgi Popa fought against the Russians in the 1992 war, when Moldova was a newborn country that could barely defend itself.
They conquered Tiraspol and tried to conquer all of Moldova. We were barely able to fight. We had no army. We could only defend ourselves. We were able to stop them, and we even liberated some territories.
Now, with Russia advancing in Ukraine and ever closer to Moldova, fears that Moscow wants to extend its military dominance to the far reaches of its former empire are no longer political fiction, say observers.
There would be two options to have a regime change here, more like kind of Belarusization of Moldova, yes, becoming a kind of ally of Russia, or even inclusion in this big project of Novorossiya.
Analysts say Russia has a vested interest in controlling Moldova within its sphere of influence.
Everyone knows that Russia is interested in Moldova. It is not something new. Even though militarily we are a neutral country, as our constitution says, Russian political influence has always been noticeable in elections, where Moscow has made it clear who are their favorites.
While Moldova's official language is Romanian, the Russian language is spoken by a large part of the population. Yet Romanian culture coexists with the country's Russian identity. Theaters like the Mihai Eminescu try to keep the Romanian culture and language alive in the face of Russian cultural dominance. The fear now is that, as has happened in eastern Ukraine, Moscow will cite a need to defend the Russian-speaking population as an excuse to attack Moldova.
It seems to me that it is I who should be responsible for my identity, but not my neighbor. It is not my neighbor who should tell me who I am.
Life goes on in Moldova, despite the war in neighboring Ukraine and the internal threat posed by Russian troops in Transnistria. But the Russian invasion of Ukraine on February 24th is raising questions of how much longer the status quo might hold. For Ricardo Marchina in Chisinau, Elizabeth Chernev, VOA News.
European Union energy ministers meet on Monday in Brussels as Russia threatens to widen natural gas shutoffs to more countries. This is after cutting off service to Poland and Bulgaria. The bloc says it's unified and is preparing new sanctions against Russia. But will that unity last? Lisa Bryant has that story.
On Wednesday, Russia cut off natural gas supplies to European Union member states Poland and Bulgaria after warning so-called unfriendly countries would have to pay for gas in rubles. The move is seen as a Russian effort to prop up its currency, as most of its EU energy contracts are paid for in dollars or euros. EU members responded coolly to Russia's warning. Some of the toughest language came from European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen.
It comes as no surprise that the Kremlin uses fossil fuels to try to blackmail us. This is something the European Commission has been preparing for in close coordination and solidarity with member states and international partners. Our response will be immediate, united, and coordinated.
The Russian action comes as European and other Western nations ramp up military support to Kyiv and sanctions against Russia for its invasion of Ukraine. EU member states have already agreed to phase out Russian coal imports. Germany now says it could also handle a possible Russian oil embargo, which the bloc is now discussing, but there are no immediate plans to cut off Russian gas.
Lundi, une réunion des ministres de l'énergie à Bruxelles.
Speaking to French TV Thursday, Foreign Minister Jean-Yves Le Drian of France, whose country currently holds the rotating EU presidency, said a meeting Monday of EU energy ministers aims to find ways to help Poland and Bulgaria get through a difficult period. Brussels also says a new package of Russian sanctions is expected soon. For now, Poland and Bulgaria are considered to have enough gas for their needs, either stored or acquired from other EU members. Less certain is what happens when colder weather hits, or if Russia halts energy exports to other countries like Germany or Italy. That's a concern expressed by German lawmaker Jens Fischer of the conservative Christian Democratic Union Party in an interview on France 24 TV.
For the summer, we are probably good and we have enough supplies of gas as well. The next winter is going to be when it bites and also when the war drags on. And I think that will be a completely different scenario and question. Hopefully, we have some solutions by then.
Other European politicians also worry about the fallout of sanctions if the war drags on. Already, the price of some staples, like Ukraine-sourced sunflower oil, is rising in places like France, where recent presidential elections focused on cost of living issues. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Speaking to VOA, Benjamin Schmidt, research associate at Harvard University and senior fellow for democratic resilience at the Center for European Policy Analysis, adds,
"Is Moscow using energy as a political weapon? They have been weaponizing energy in this way for many, many years, especially over the past decade. The Putin regime has used energy and energy cutoffs, or even the threat of energy cutoffs, as a key political lever to try to extract concessions from Europe when it comes to foreign security policy. I think that the transatlantic community continues to need to look at, you know, multilateral sanctions moves to continue to limit the ability of Russia to make revenues easily from its oil and gas exports. I think the next step that needs to happen is sanctions actions on a technology-calibrated approach that looks at how to sanction the Russian energy export vessel fleet, maritime fleet.
And since the start of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, people have spread information and misinformation about the war on social media. For VOA, Ali Siddiqui has this story on how social media posts are affecting the perceptions of young people and beyond.
As the world focuses on Russia's war in Ukraine, another war is being fought on people's phones.
I have seen plenty of false narratives out there and plenty of just like blatant lies about the conflict, about the context.
In the information war, TikTok has become a battlefield. Popular with young people, the platform known for dance videos has, for some, become an information source on the war in Ukraine. With new unverified content appearing on TikTok by the second, some analysts worry that the platform misleads its users, numbering 1 billion worldwide.
Those can be used to, you know, enlighten, you know, folks on what's really happening on the ground. They can be used to verify or sort of add support for, you know, for example, disclosures by intelligence communities and elsewhere. And they can also be taken out of context and, you know, used to mislead or to disinform. And we see all of that happening in this conflict.
Students at American University in Washington told VOA they have detected misinformation about the war. Ryan Loker is a TikTok content creator with more than 18,000 followers.
A lot of these theories being spread about the war in Donbas or Ukraine being filled with neo-Nazis, a lot of it stems from, I guess, people who their politics are entirely anti-American, and that's kind of all that they know. And so they automatically resort to getting their information from sites that are pro-Russia, pro-Iranian, pro-China, etc.
Matthew Lee, a student at American University School of International Service, doesn't use TikTok. He worries about Beijing's influence over the Chinese-owned app.
I mean, we see in Chinese social media, like, a lot of national stuff being said, a lot of pro-Russia stuff being said, and because of how tightly they control everything, it's hard to say whether it really is real people or folks that the Chinese government pays to say things.
Albina Tokakova, an American university student from Russia, believes both Russia and Ukraine are using TikTok and social media to push their own narratives about the conflict, framing it either as a war against subjugation or one in which Russia is a savior.
So I feel like definitely each country is trying to like show their like perspective and put themselves in that spot of being like they're losing something or they're doing the right thing.
To combat misinformation on social media, the Biden administration has reached out to TikTok stars to discuss what's happening on the ground in Ukraine and U.S. goals and policies towards Kyiv and Moscow. Analysts say the administration hopes the message will reach households in Russia, where the flow of uncensored news has been disrupted.
One way that the White House really sort of effectively competed in the information domain using truthful information, you know, exposing Russian troop deaths, for example. That's another way that the administration is using truthful information to really get out of vulnerability.
TikTok's user base skews young, making it a potent tool to shape perceptions and opinions where people are most impressionable. Like any social media platform, it can be used to inform or mislead. Ali Siddiqui for VOA News, Washington.
And that's going to do it for us this week. Be sure to stay up to date with our continuing coverage on Ukraine, as well as news and events from around the world. You can do so 24 hours a day at voanews.com, as well as on our social media platforms. Just be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm VOA's Steve Miller. Be well, be safe, and good night.
This is the voice of America. Washington, D.C.